Coming up on This Week in Radio Tech, Tom Vernon joins us. You know Tom, he writes a lot of articles in Radio World, and he's a consultant and studies a lot of things about the broadcast business and about listeners and engineers. Tom joins us to talk about smart home speakers and how they are changing and may really change the face of audio. That's coming up on This Week in Radio Tech. This Week in Radio Tech is brought to you by BSW and the Morevember sale, where you do get more for less. Save up to 45% more cash on more great gear for a more powerful performance. By the Telos VX VOIP talk show system, now used by local and network television broadcasters to streamline workflows and provide perfect communication with remote crews. And by the new Ruby console from Lavvo, with AutoMix smart mixing and a context-sensitive user interface. See Lavvo in your future at lavvo.com/twert. Hey, welcome into This Week in Radio Tech. You caught me unprepared here. I was trying to untangle a wire. Here we go. Our show is going to be about smart home speakers, and I wanted to get this one up here, and I realized my cable was too short, so during the intro, I was, there we go. Hooking up a longer wire to it. Just plug it in. We'll see if she who shall not be named. There she is. There she comes on. How about that? She who shall not be named at any time during the show, if she'll come on. And she does. I got another one to show you too. Hey, welcome into This Week in Radio Tech. It's episode 372. I'm Kirk Harnack, your host. Delighted that you're here. We talk about everything from the microphone to the light bulb at the top of the tower. I promise you, I do have that beacon. It's still back in the garage, getting worked on from time to time as I find time. And today we're talking about something like the new radio receiver for listeners, and maybe a new radio station control device. And that would be one of these. That's what Tom Vernon's going to talk to us about coming up. But right now, let's bring in our co-host. Chris Tobin is here. He's on location from someplace that, I don't know, doesn't look so mysterious. Hey, Chris, welcome in.
No. Hello. Thank you, Kirk. There's nothing mysterious about this place at all. It's a lecture hall, and the radio station will be doing a public affairs show this evening with the mayor and a couple of guests. So we're getting things set up for the Facebook Live and I think YouTube live streams. That starts at 8 o'clock tonight. So what's behind me is just basically the seating for the audience, two cameras set up, and four guests and a host. And our host is from local NJTV television station. So it's going to work out nice. It should be fun.
Good. And I'm sorry, did you say you're streaming that live or just be available later or what?
Oh, it'll be live. You go to the website, okay. Click on the live button, and it'll be live.
Cool. Cool. Hey, by the way, we got plenty of good feedback on last week's show where we simply played the lecture, the seminar, the history lesson from John Lyons at the One World Trade Center. Chris, I sure enjoyed that. How about you?
Oh, I had a good time. I enjoyed it. I enjoyed watching it again because I caught a few things I didn't realize. I was like, oh, yeah, we did talk about that. And I did hear from some folks, and it was a lot of people enjoyed it because it's just something you just don't know. And then some of the pictures we showed at the end also, I got a couple some feedback on. So it was nice.
Yeah, yeah. By the way, if you missed it, of course, you can watch it on This Week in Radio Tech. The video itself is available on YouTube as well, just the One World Trade Center video. And a lot of folks, I mean, SBE chapters have asked, can I use that as a program for one of our upcoming SBE meetings? And the answer is yes, absolutely. So we might be able to put that out. I should probably put a link to both our show's video, which we don't need that. It was last week's show, Tort 371, and as well as a link to the direct link to the YouTube video happens to be on my YouTube channel called arrowshots.tv. You folks are welcome to watch that. Hey, we're going to bring in our guest now this week. It's a name that's basically a household name. If you are an engineer and you read any of the publications like Radio World magazine or radio, any of these, you're going to see Tom's name. It's Tom Vernon. Tom, welcome in to This Week in Radio Tech.
Thanks, Kirk. Good to be here.
So I was looking at your LinkedIn page, and my goodness, you've done a lot of stuff. Is it Dr. Tom Vernon?
Yes, it is.
Good deal. Good deal. Before we take our first commercial break and then jump right into our topic at hand, just tell me a little bit about yourself, about your writing and engineering career, and what else is interesting to you.
Oh, boy. In 1 minute, that's tough to do. I started in radio after college, and you know, did small market radio in Keene, New Hampshire, went on to Boston, got my master's at BU, worked at WBUR, worked my way up to Heftel, KISS 108, worked at Channel 7. I went back to school. I was working in Philadelphia at WXPN, doing a lot of contract engineering. Right now, the thing I think that's most interesting for me is getting my pilot's license and flying. I'll be the third generation in my family to get a pilot's license. It started with my grandfather and then my mother and now me. So that's one of my current interests. Is that it? I mean,
yeah.
Is that a minute?
That's okay. Awesome. And I can't wait for you to get your pilot's license. That's terrific. I was very fortunate to get my license. Oh my goodness. 20 plus years ago and got to do some flying and even had some radio stations pay for it. So it wasn't bad. Yeah, I haven't flown in a while, though. You know, to fly, you need two things. You need money and time at the same time.
Right, exactly.
Wow. And of course, my favorite phrase from learning to fly, there's nothing more useless than a runway behind you or a sky above you.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Hey, so we're going to jump into our show about smart home speakers. Like, I've got a Google Home thingy here, and she who shall not be named, we'll have to call her the Echo. I have an original Echo upstairs, and we just got an Echo Show here at the Harnack House, which is pretty cool because we can easily do video chats with it in there, but we can also listen to radio stations. I listen to my stations quite frequently. If I've just got a minute or two and I just holler at this gal right here to play one of my radio stations, it works. So we'll get to that. Our show is brought to you in part by the folks at the Telos Alliance. And for you watching or listening right now, I got to warn you, this one ad is a little bit long and we're only going to play it once, but it's very informative because it's about virtual radio and several different people's perspective on virtual radio, brought to you by the Telos Alliance. So Suncast, if you're ready, let's roll that ad.
The idea of a virtual radio is to disconnect the traditional XLR and to go over IP.
Virtual radio is the abstraction first of the surfaces.
So first, virtual radio is the abstraction of the surface. Okay.
Absolutely, okay. Because the goal is to aggregate all the control of all the hardware device you need for broadcast.
Yeah, usually from my experience, if you virtualize stuff and make it so you can send subsell sections of it to other people and make give the possibility to other people to outsource it, the technology becomes more available to people who do not have the funding to get the technologies themselves.
It can be a connection, but can also be a wireless connection.
Yeah.
And whatever you like to put into action, you can do it over an IP address. And this IP address can go from a local studio to a remote facility, to a remote broadcast.
What am I looking at here? This looks like you've made some kind of a mixer.
Absolutely. It's an IP tablet application where you can control the mixer included in the new version of Xnode.
I want to tell people about this. The new Xnode, if you upgrade to the latest software, instead of just being four stereo in and four stereo outs, it includes a matrix router inside the Xnode, and you can control the level of each of these matrix points, which means you can make a mixer.
Absolutely. It's a complete, very smart mixer that you have. You can control your entrance, your input, so microphone input, the analog input, AES, digital input, and what is new is with a grid, you can control and you can make your own PGM. One PGM 2 for output. So, and now, as any console, you have also the control monitor on the headphone control volume for selecting the source on for each input. You can preview automatically, it makes the cross point in the grid in the Xnode.
Wow.
So, it's a very smart and simply mixer, very cheap because one Xnode is very cheap.
Yeah.
And you have many, a big range of Xnode, digital, analog, microphone, and the better one is mixed because you have one microphone entrance on many outputs, many inputs. It's a combo.
And you have GPIO also.
And you have GPIO also. So the IP tablet, you can just control the Xnode and you have a very, very smart console with a virtual controller.
So the idea is maybe I could put my codec or my phone system or my mixer on an Amazon web server, for example.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. So, and you would save a lot of money because you do not have to buy the codec, which is probably very expensive.
Virtual radio, virtualization in the radio business mm-hmm. can be kind of anything. You can send out a reporter in the field and he can make an intervention in radio from his cell phone. You can put a remote studio somewhere and just play the music from your studio facility and only get a microphone over a transmission line.
Sure, sure.
So you ensure the quality of your music on the air mm-hmm. while you only take a risk with the audio coming from the microphone.
If you buy a piece of hardware and you're probably only using a small part of its capability, but if you virtualize this, then you can fill up the host machine with work, yeah?
Yes, and you do not need to buy the hardware that you don't need, but you only rent the parts that you need and pay for them.
This does sound like reducing the barrier to entry.
Beside the hardware part, there's also the personal part, so the guys who operate this or who keep it running.
Yeah.
So you don't have to invest in technicians and observing everything is running smoothly, so you can just use it as a service, buy it as a service, and they keep it up and running, and you can concentrate on that, what you want to do, like making radio.
Making radio, yeah. You have a little demo I think you're going to show us about what you're beginning to do in virtual radio.
But it's already getting some shape.
Yep.
I'm incorporating an Axia X node, which is absolutely remotely controllable, and I'm going to use it as a sort of a mixer. So you can really make some audio fades and start-stop and even a PFL bus. In Livewire, you got 8 channels in and 8 channels out, 8 stereo channels in and 8 stereo channels out. So you can really have a player, A and B player, for instance. You can even put some cards if you like. You can put your microphone, you can put anything you like.
No, you're talking about an X-Node, not a mixer.
Not a mixer, yeah. Just a simple, plain, rack-mounted X-Node with two buttons.
I can't wait to try this at my own radio stations. You talk about small, diminutive, efficient, compact, and fun and easy to operate. Jerome, thank you so very much for bringing this to our attention. I'm Kirk Harnack in the Telos Alliance booth. Wow, thanks a lot, Telos Alliance, for letting me produce that video and getting different people's ideas on what virtual radio is. And we'll dispense with that for now, but coming up in the next few weeks, Telos Alliance will be giving you different perspectives on virtual radio and what that means and kind of where we're going with all that. All right, back in the show this week in Radio Tech. Thanks for sitting through that and paying attention. Tom Vernon is with us. And Tom, you wrote an article in Radio World, and actually I don't have the paper copy, but I do have the electronic copy of it up here. Your article was entitled, "Can Smart Speakers Bring Radio Home?" I think I know what you mean by that, but why don't you tell me what you mean by that headline?
Well, really, you look at a lot of the surveys on what's going on with radio as far as listenership. It still has a pretty good following in cars, but it's been following off in the home and in the business. And, you know, a survey, I think, done by Jacobs Media showed that a lot of millennials don't even own a radio. So really, the hope with smart speakers is that by bringing this new technology into the home, listenership will come up again. I mean, basically, the AM/FM tabletop radio is gone now. So something has to replace it if radio is to come back into the homes in a big way. And hopefully smart speakers will be that thing.
Hard to imagine that there aren't many folks out there who haven't played with one of these, but just sometimes we as engineers are the last people to adopt something. Hey, I wonder if Suncast could switch the camera back over here or not, or if he's not got, there we go. Okay. So, I hope this is powered up, just to show you what's possible. And by the way, I, as an engineer with my radio stations, I really didn't have to do anything to make this happen. What I'm about to show you, except to make sure that my stations were listed on TuneIn. So if you've got one of these boxes around you right now, you might want to turn the radio down for a second because I'm about to speak her name. Alexa, play WNIX. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
WNIX from TuneIn.
And?
Second woman says Franken was aggressive and harassing in his calls.
So,
mute that. Alexa, stop. And so it's really easy just even to holler across the room, because even this $50 box has some really good microphones that pick up. Even my son, who, you know, doesn't necessarily speak really perfectly well, he gets the Amazon Echo to play what he wants. Alexa, stop. Thank you. All right, so that's the basic functionality, and you have the same functionality here with this too. This is the Google Home Mini, and this one doesn't seem to be tied in as well to my radio stations. I've got to figure out how to get them listed, but you can make phone calls with this. So you can just tell this thing, you know, blah, 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 call mom, and next thing I know, it's looked up in my contacts, and it's placing a landline phone call to my mom's home. Because it knows who my mom is. And Tom, to what you began by saying, I've noticed that our family and even I listen to radio a lot more than I used to. Radio in air quotes for those of you listening. So what data do you have, or is it just anecdotal that people are listening to the radio using these smart devices?
Oh, there's a lot of information that's come out that it's already had a big impact on the listenership. I don't have the numbers in front of me or anything that I can draw upon. But yes, there is a lot of research that shows that it's already making a comeback. And one of the big things is asking people, well, what do you use smart speakers for? And one of the top two or three is listening to the radio.
Yeah, because that seems like a natural thing to do. You know, when I first got my original Amazon Echo, you know, I would ask it what the weather was and what the temperature is and what time is it, and just, you know, play my newscast and that kind of thing. But I really wasn't thinking to listen to the radio, and I wasn't thinking to do much else with it. And then it just occurred to me, I could ask it to listen to my radio station. First, just a test, and it worked on every one of them because they're listed on TuneIn. We don't have any skills for ours, and I guess we'll get into that in just a minute. But Chris Tobin, do you have one of these smart speakers yet?
No, I do not. I've been tempted to invest in one and have some fun, but I do know a lot of people who do have them, and I think radio stations need to, and I'm sure Tom will talk about it, need to rethink how they deliver and what they program to get that speaker or the smart speaker to become part of the lexicon of life outside of the car.
I should send you one for Christmas, Chris. How about that?
Oh, you don't have to do that. I could get myself one.
I want to make sure you have one.
Some fun with that.
I'm going to send you one for Christmas after the show's over. I'll send you one. And by the way, if you're just listening to talk radio, just the speaker and this little guy is fine in my opinion. Music, not so great. So I noticed myself doing this, and not that I'm a bellwether for what other people do, but, you know, if it's something that if it's a new habit or something that I've picked up, honestly, a lot of other people have too, just because either I'm following the crowd or it just makes sense to do, and I do it. So around our house, yeah, we're listening to a lot more radio than we were before. Tom, one of the things you really studied, though, was what radio stations need to do to make sure they are most effectively appearing on these home devices. You want to talk to us about that?
Yeah, I think probably the biggest mistake you can make is to basically do what you did. Just get the thing set up and sit there in your office and say, Alexa, play, you know, B97.3. It starts playing. You say, oh, we're done. Scratch that off the to-do list and move on. It's really something you have to invest a lot of time in. I mean, it's like programming your radio station. It's like tweaking your processor. It's kind of a work in progress. It's never really done. So, step one is to get there. And that's really important, because these are sort of the formative years for this medium. And this is where the listening habits are being formed. So you want to be there now and get in on the bandwagon and sort of get your brand out there while it's still a new thing. Going beyond that, when it first comes on, when you first connect, you probably want to have your announcers welcoming listeners to the station. And to take it a little bit further and tweak it, you want to have it done by day part. So, for example, if someone's tuning in the morning, your morning DJ will say, hey, welcome to B97.3. I'm so-and-so in the morning. And, you know, thanks for joining us. And midday, it'll shift to the midday person, you know, overnights and et cetera. So those are some of the things just to begin with you can do to make it work. I guess one of the others is really think about on-demand listening, because this isn't just about listening live. You have perhaps an archive of programs, you have podcasts, but if you want to have go back to some of your asynchronous things, you may want to do that because not everyone is in drive time when your drive time show is on. And they may be driving home at 7 o'clock in the evening, and you can say, you know, play drive time show, and it'll come up then. And you'll be able to capture a lot much larger drive audience in the morning and the evening by making it a little bit more asynchronous, and so people can who aren't in the traditional drive time can capitalize on it. The second thing is if you're a community radio station or a college station that has block programming, and maybe you have one of your more interesting programs is on like Sunday morning from 6 to 8. Well, probably a lot of people aren't going to get up at 6 in the morning to hear the show, no matter how interesting it is. But yeah, if you can make it available on demand and easily accessible through your online menu, people are going to tune into that. So off the top of my head, those are a few of the things you can do to start making it a little bit more interactive and more different than just a traditional audio stream.
So to do the things that you just mentioned, to have a departed disc jockey greet you. And by the way, I hope it's not a long greeting. I just want a quick confirmation that I am listening to the right thing, and maybe by having my, you know, the disc jockey I expect to be on say something right then. Hi, this is DK in the morning, and you're listening to Q102. You know, if it said that, and then bam, started playing the Q102 stream, fine. But I don't want a big pre-roll commercial. That's not going to interest me at all. My own radio stations, if you listen to them on our web app from our websites, two of our stations have about a 15-second pre-roll. I'm not interested in that, but we play it. You know, that's what we do to help monetize the stream. I hope people aren't thinking to have a big pre-roll. You're going to hear the ads anyway on the stream. That's why I'm not interested in a pre-roll. Tom, did you get any sense of if people are doing ad pre-rolls before they start playing your stream?
I haven't heard that much about ad pre-rolls, but you're right on target with the need for brevity. And part of that is, as you said, you do want to have somebody to come on and welcome, because a lot of times there's buffering or something and the stream just can't come on instantly. And while your stream is buffering, well, here's this guy with the 15 seconds of welcome to the station, and, you know, that's okay. But beyond that, you have to sort of think as you design your interface for the station, how you want that to sound, because what you don't want to do is sort of follow the model of, help support lines and torture people with a long, you know, phone tree of, you know, for this, dial this, et cetera, et cetera. And really some of the guidelines are to make it, you know, no more than four options, and say something like your four choices are listen live, scan podcasts, choose music, or more options where you can dump some of the miscellaneous, you know, lesser, less likely selected options.
So Chris Tobin, your station in particular is one that would greatly benefit from being able to bring up individual shows on demand. Now, my stations are all commercial stations, except for a little bit of weekend programming. 1 hour is pretty much indistinguishable from another. Maybe hopefully the morning show is good, but other than that, not so much. Chris, where do you think your station might be going in terms of these skills from smart speakers?
Well, we would definitely be day parting. I mean, we do that now with the website, with the web stream, and we do a little stuff like that. Some of the things we've run into with difficulty is just the technologies available, the way it's being implemented, that can't always make it work the way you want. So mm-hmm. It should be fun to see what we do, because our programming and formatting is very different from, say, your stations, Kirk, and others that are more of the pop stuff. And not everything, if you will, is programmed or designed with that in mind. So we've run into a few quirks from time to time with folks with specialty stuff and say, hey, we could do this, this, and this for you. We're like, okay, here's what we do. Oh, yeah, we can't do that. Okay, next. So I'm looking forward to working with the crew, the programming folks on the smart speaker stuff. I'm sure we'll be – I know there's things going on. That's all I can say, but I know there's stuff in the works. So we'll see what the new year brings.
Tom, did you find out much about the process of how a radio station goes about getting skills implemented? There's an article I just brought up. We'll link to it in the show notes from Zap Media. 3 reasons why radio stations should launch Echo skills now. Number 1, claim your name. Number 2, control the listener experience, and also bring listening back into the home and car. and because advertisers are experimenting with She Who Shall Not Be Named, the Amazon Echo. How do you get that done? Because Tom, our stations are on here without us doing anything except making sure that TuneIn knows about us. How do we go farther?
Well, as you said, it's just to get to that point where you can just say, you know, play, you know, your station and it happens. Doesn't take a lot of tech savvy or skill. But when you start getting into some of the things I've just been talking about, you do have to build on to that. And it is not, and I have not done this myself, but as I talk to people for the article, it's not something that requires an advanced degree in computer science, but it's not something you can teach yourself in an afternoon either. You know, one of the people I talked to, Rob Meese, who's a small market TV and radio broadcaster in Ohio, happens to be a programmer, and he talked about setting a lot of these things up himself and also kind of running a cottage business doing it for some other stations. But if you are not a programmer, you do need to talk to someone like Zap Media or some of the other people who have the skills and can put this together for you.
Yeah, Zap Media, and by the way, that's XAPP, zapmedia.com is one place that does this. Another one is a company that's actually in Cleveland, Ohio. They're just not too far away from my employer, Telos, and that's Futuri, F-U-T-U-R-I, futurimedia.com. They write skills for the Amazon Echo, and there are plenty more too. And a lot of them are cottage industries. They're individual programmers who latched onto this quickly, and they get it, and they know what to do. Then there's this other company, Broadcast Bionics, and we've interviewed Dan McQuillan on this show. They've taken a slightly different tack to these skills for the Echo, and also for the Google and for the upcoming Apple product. And what they provide is additional vocabulary back end to what normal skill writers would write. And so they can include an amazing number of back end skills, things like you can say, Echo, tell the studio, I don't like that song. And that will, because the skill for the radio station doesn't understand that, it'll send that on to Broadcast Bionics back end. They'll understand it. And then they will actually, they're connected to a social media scrolling thing at the radio station studio, at the station that you're listening to. And that sentiment will pop up on that scroll. And you can search it, of course. So we're going to see more and more skills added this way from even more third and fourth party companies, I think. And it's going to get really smart. So, Tom, one of the things I've noticed, though, is that the person using the Echo has to give the right syntax. You have to call the skill by name. Is that cumbersome, or are there some? Do you think it's getting easier as time goes on as we figure this out?
Well, there are some of the things where, you know, one of the things that you want to do as you're setting up your interface is you have to make it work well for somebody who's never been there before by kind of giving them sort of a gentle introduction to some of their options. But you also have to design it so, you know, somebody who's a repeat listener who comes back again and again isn't going to have to listen through all this. And they may have a shortcut for something. They say, well, you know, play current music, play what's on now. And you have to have a lot of these things kind of built in so that you don't want people to have to memorize the exact same phrase for it to work. So yes, that's part of what's evolving is thinking about making the interface pleasant both for first timers and for repeat listeners.
You're muted.
Your mic's muted.
How about that? There we go. So I've noticed that on the Amazon store, just on Amazon.com, you can go there and you can enable a number of different skills right there just by clicking a button. For example, you can enable a skill called Radio Locator, and where that lets you find the frequency of your local stations in U.S. cities, for example. I think we're all familiar with radio-locator.com. There's a skill called My Radio. So you would enable that, and then you would say Echo, tell my radio, or you'd say, open my radio, or tell my radio to play blah, 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 whatever it is. And of course, when I invoke my stations, I don't say any of that. I just say Echo, Play, and I give the call letters. And that works on all of our stations except one, and I have to call it by something else for some reason. So I'm just wondering, when does this get even easier and not have to remember a certain syntax? And I'll give you an example. Early on when we got the Echo, my son was coming up, and we wanted to have it tell him some knock-knock jokes. And it had a skill. You could say, Echo, tell knock-knock to tell me a joke. And so the skill was named knock-knock. But that's weird English to say that, right? Now you can just tell the Echo, tell me a knock-knock joke, and it will. So that somebody figured that out, and whether they took the skill away from the original people who did knock-knock, or whether they just made them the default, or what, I don't know. But I can sure see a bit of a turf war here for stations that may be similarly named, or other, I can see some conflicts. Can't you, Tom?
Yes, there are. And you know, this is kind of odd in the middle of the show to do this, but let's just step back for a moment and kind of take the 10,000 foot view of what's happening here, because we in radio have carved out this little niche that we've been talking about. But what this really is the birth of the voice activated internet. And, you know, you think back to Star Trek Next Generation, and when they were talking to the computer, they weren't there with, you know, a keyboard and a mouse. They would just say computer, you know, and they would speak, and, you know, whatever they asked for would happen. And that's kind of where the technology is headed. We're not there yet, but it's being developed very quickly. And so, yes, we will eventually end up to what you're talking about. But it's important to understand that this is just going to change everything with the internet. And Kirk, you said that you were a pilot. And one of the things that I was told by Zap Media is they've already developed a voice activated interface for the FAA. So you can file your flight plan through voice and get a weather briefing voice activated as well.
Oh, how cool is that? And
Barry,
you're right. That does, my goodness, that changes everything. So Chris and Tom both. So, you know, for not years, but for decades, we human beings have been accustomed to interacting with devices. Like Tom, with that FAA thing, it used to be the first thing I would do is pick up a phone, and not even one of these phones, but pick up, you know, a phone like I have next to me here on my desk. And I'd dial an 800, 1-800-WX-BRIEF. And then I would punch in some numbers and I'd get a weather briefing. If I wanted to talk to a weather briefer, I could, but I had to use this other device, and use my fingers, and I would have to do some things. This voice controlled internet that you just mentioned, Tom. Wow. Now I realize, yeah, we're using another device, like this one. But we don't have to use our fingers. We don't have to pick something up. We don't have to look up a phone number or remember a phone number. Now we have to remember what to say. And hopefully that's becoming more and more natural. Chris, you usually have such a good handle on coming technologies as you put them to use. What are your thoughts on that change in operational paradigm? The new GUI, it's our mouth.
It's going to be fascinating to see how the developers go with it. It's sort of like on a tangent of artificial intelligence. How does one learn all the differences between you and I? The three of us on this netcast have three different ways to probably ask the same question. How does the device interpret that? You know, it's like typing in a search engine. I may type in a certain series of words that creates a sentence that I think is logical, or Boolean logic, if we'll use that phrase. Sure. And then Tom may type in a different set of words trying to get the same results that I got, and then you do the same. I think that's where the paradigm shift is going to be interesting, to see how all this is handled. Because try it now. When you have Siri and the other products that you can talk to, how many times you say something or you dictate a sentence, and because of the way you speak, the words, the dialect. I have a sinus cold today, so I sound a little nasally. I may not sound like I normally do. So I'm curious how all these things will come together, how people will tolerate it. Because nowadays, if it doesn't happen within a tenth of a second on your phone, odds are there's a problem and you're done with the service.
Well,
I kid you not. Actually, I ride the subways. I watch people yelling at their phone like, you're on the subway. We just left the station. There is no service between stations. Trust me, yelling will not do you any good. I will say it's entertaining for me to watch how people have lost sight of the fact that there's no service between the stations. Because they've become so accustomed to, as in the series of Star Trek, where you just talk to the device and there's a response.
Yeah.
Or it's, or those who are older remember, you never question, I use this example all the time, if there's a telephone on the table, you never ask the first question, is this telephone connected to something? You just simply walk over, pick up the handset, expect dial tone. Today, you know, fast forward to today, people pick up this device, holding an iPhone in front of the camera, and just expect it to be functional. Yet I'm in a part of the country right now, maybe, there's no cell service. So nothing other than what I've programmed on the phone is going to work. So everything is shifting. It's great.
Yeah.
It's just interesting how people tolerate it.
Expectations. That's very true. Hey, we're going to continue that thought. And we're also going to hear from Tom about some future uses inside the radio station to control stuff inside the station. So that's coming up. Hey, our show This Week in Radio Tech is brought to you in part by my friends over at Broadcast Supply Worldwide. Their website is bswusa.com. And right now they're having a sale. It's their Morevember sale. You know, they've always got a name for their sales. But the Morevember sale, you get more for less. And then, like on Thanksgiving, take the rest of the day off. During the Morevember sale, you can get a number of different things, like a hot hybrid for podcasting. Get $100 off the usual low price on JK Audio's podcast host. This unit helps turn your desktop into a professional podcast center with top quality telephone audio while delivering superb separation of caller and talent voices. It's now only $394 for a limited time, so act fast. You also can get a free mic and a hot processor. Get a free ElectroVoice RE20 dynamic mic. That's a $765 value when you buy Orbán's OptiMod 5500i. That's a 5-band FM broadcast processor, boasting a DSP-based stereo encoder, full RDS and RBDS generator, and more. It is now $3,690.75 for a limited time. So under $3,700, get that Orbán processor, the 5500i, and a free microphone. And hey, if you need a solid-state unit to play back some audio, and you know that can come in pretty handy for fill audio, emergency audio, get a $200 instant rebate on the Tascam SSR250N. Now, that's a solid-state, networkable unit that offers high-quality playback and recording to an SD card or to a USB stick while providing automatic uploading and downloading via FTP. Yeah, it's got an FTP server in it right there. Just enter R250 as your promo code at checkout. And then you can check out all the voiceover packs that are approved by Joe Cipriano, voiceover dude extraordinaire. Yeah, there's the whole list of packages right there. There's the starter pack, the pro pack, Joe's official studio pack. And then if you're on the road, you need to do voiceovers there, the budget travel pack and Joe's official travel pack that he travels with. So be like Joe, get yourself a great travel pack, including microphone and mic pre and USB connector and adapter and all that stuff with one of the various pro packs. BSWUSA.com is the website to go to, and just go to the Morevember sale, get more for less. And you know what? When you order from BSWUSA.com, you can order as late as 7 p.m. Eastern time and still specify to get your equipment the next day if you'd like, or two-day UPS. The reason is because their big warehouse is just outside of Columbus, Ohio. It's near the Columbus Airport, and that's a big UPS hub. That's pretty smart, huh? They'll box your stuff up, take it over to the airport. It'll leave by UPS overnight. Again, if you want it, you got to pay for it, but you can have the stuff overnight. If you're like me and you forget to order until late in the day, you can be a hero. Just pull out the credit card. Don't spend too much and order by 7 p.m. Eastern time and get that equipment the next day if you need it. Thanks a lot, BSW, Broadcast Supply Worldwide, for sponsoring This Week in Radio Tech. All right, we're talking to Tom Vernon. Chris Tobin is along. He's getting ready for a live broadcast there. I'm going to have some dignitaries, and he's in a seminar room. Chris, what technology are you using to get this audio and video out to the radio station and then out to the web?
Well, we're doing it in two forms. We're using, for the radio station feed, it's an actual IP codec that's connected to the internal broadband here, and that'll go back to the master control studio. and that'll get put on the air. And then for the internet side of things, the broadband side, we're using a computer, desktop computer, a Core i5 Intel, and I'm using two Sony PXW70s, I think they call them. They're high-def cameras, and using the HDMI output of that to feed two HDMI USB converters into this computer, and then using a software called vMix, stuff we use here at GFQ, to pretty much take the place of a traditional Grass Valley switcher, and also creates the streaming encoding for us. So doing everything right here from the desktop that I'm sitting at, and I'm actually using the webcam and the vMix and everything right now for this setup. And when we're done, I'll close out and just click on the icon and switch over to our broadcast setup. And I take the audio from the mixer, so the stage audio, we'll call it house audio, gets fed into the camera. So the camera and the HDMI audio and video are together in sync in an echo. I don't do a separate audio setup, try to sync them together.
Yeah. Cool. That vMix software, that lets you not only switch cameras, but also does it encode for the web?
Yes, it encodes for the web. It'll be going to Facebook Live. It also lets me do overlays, logo inserts, crossfades, wipes, you name it. It's basically a full-blown switching package, and it works really well. I've been using it for several years for other projects, and just keep upgrading it, and can't go wrong. It's pretty cool.
Awesome. That's vMix is the software there. Hey, Tom Vernon is our guest. He's a renowned writer for Radio World, and he just researches all kinds of things that interest him. And one of those things now has been smart speakers. So, Tom, you told me earlier today about the idea of using smart speakers to control stuff around you, like in the radio station. Give me some examples of things that people are thinking about.
For example, just imagine a voice-activated remote control for your transmitters. Say, Alexa, turn on emergency generator number 2, and you know what happens. But really, really, that's really the subject of an upcoming article for Radio World. I mean, this first one was about how you get the sound out there and how you, build a service for your listeners. The second article will be more focused on what are all the things you can do around the radio station. So I'm not really, haven't got too deep into that yet, but soon.
I'd like to be able to say, and I'll change the name, I'd like to say Echo. Check the tower lights at WNIX, and it would go check the tower lights and maybe, talk to my Burke remote control or something else and give me the status of the tower lights. Or Echo at WNIX, how much fuel is in the generator tank? It would tell me. That would be kind of cool to know. Well, what power level switch WNIX to night power pattern. That would be pretty cool. Is that the kind of thing people are actually thinking about?
Yes, they are, among other things. Those are all things that are possible, but you also have to, if you're going to go there with some of the examples you just said, you really have to be mindful of security, because you think about this at your home or in the station, you're putting little boxes with microphones all over the place. and Amazon and Google are on the other end. So, and it's completely open. So what could possibly go wrong there? So you really need to think a lot about security. And part of that, and that opens up a whole other set of issues, because we have, supposedly, we have software that will recognize your voice and say, okay, if it's not your voice talking, then, ignore it. But I have gotten a demonstration of software where you read into a microphone basically a sentence of nonsense syllables, but it's every inflection in the English language. And I read this in for the guy, and he says, okay, now that I've got that, I have your voice font, and I can make you say anything I want. And they could sit there and type things in, and it would be me speaking things I've never said before, and it would pass as my voice. So the technology is already out there to hack any kind of voice system that's in place. So it's something to think about before you get too carried away with turning your transmitters on and off with your voice.
That's going to be interesting if we can come up with some kind of security key or second factor authentication. If you're actually going to control things with your Echo or Google Home, You've got to have, you know, a Bluetooth key within range or something. You've got, or maybe a verbal password. I don't know, or some kind of sequence. But yeah, you think that'd be important. You know, a fellow who's been on this show before, and Chris, you know him, Alex Hartman. When I saw him at the Wisconsin Broadcasters, he told me about, and he's going to come on the show and talk about this, that he has interfaced the Amazon Echo with a few, I mean, it's just a demonstration right now, with a few things around the radio station. If it can take a contact closure, then he can control it. But he's doing it through the Wemo interface. So I don't know all about that, but basically you have to have the Wemo interface, which does give you the ability to have either serial commands or contact closures to come out of that, based on things that you say, and you can program what you say. You can program the skill with the Amazon Echo. So we're going to see some hacks like that first. I wonder how long it's going to take for a company like Burk or Davicom or somebody like that to instantiate, skills for the Amazon Echo or others. Tom, you got any thoughts about that? Just a lot of possibilities here, huh?
Well, I think the other thing to talk about with security is we've talked all about the incredible growth in AI and voice recognition, but it's also important to realize that the visual component is also developed by leaps and bounds, especially facial recognition. And mm-hmm. one of the things that's supposed to be out with the next iPhone is your face will be your password, basically. And mm-hmm. they think they've got it so good that, yeah, I mean, you're not going to be able to hold up someone's picture or something like that. It actually has to be your face, and that will unlock your phone. So maybe part of not enabling people to hack into Amazon Echo may have something to do with facial recognition down the road.
And I've just heard some reports this week that that facial recognition is not as strong as what Apple would like us to, or would have liked it to be. But people are already, you know, it's only been out for a couple of weeks now, and people already have some hacks that apparently, look, you're not going to be casually hacked by the guy sitting next to you at the train station. But if somebody wanted to produce a hack, got your phone, and then picked up, 50 pictures of you from the internet, then they could construct a model that would fool the phone. But that early days. It's going to get worse, and then it's going to get better, because things always do that. They get worse, and then they get better. So,
it's
wow.
Like that movie Sneakers.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. What about that, Chris?
My voice is my passport. That's the line in the movie where they take the recordings of a conversation between two people and then take the voice, the words, and snip it into a sentence so they can play it back from a cassette player into the man trap at this game toys place. So they play the recording, my voice is my passport, and it also looks for something else for biometrics, and they were able to break in. And that was, 1992 with that movie. So imagine what was going on back then to come up with that. So, yes, voice recognition, as Tom pointed out, I actually was working at a company, a broadcast group, who had actually was pioneering that stuff, and it was interesting to watch a robotic head, if you will, animated head of Paul Harvey talking. And it was all of his words because they recorded him, and then they spliced it together, if you will. And it was done. It was 1995. We were watching this demonstration, and I was like, "Wow, the Imagineers really can do imaginable things." So, to watch this come to fruition and see it happening now, I'm like, "Well, this is pretty cool." I got the chance to see it in the early days when it was really, you know, pioneering and breaking apart. And that didn't work. Well, try that. Oh, that's not working. To the point now, you can buy a phone and say, "Yeah, here you go. Give it a try." Have fun.
Tom, you heard this this voice production software where you read this gobbledygook sentence and somebody then made your voice say things, right? You heard that?
Right. Yes.
Okay. So, you know, just as a little sideline, I read audiobooks. Here's the latest audiobook that I have read. It's available now on audible.com. Please Don't Touch the Fountain, Sexy and Scary Short Stories by my friend Scarlet Ink. Not her real name. And I'm wondering, how soon will voice narrators, book narrators, be still in business before you can just type this into an engine and out will come the words, maybe with some decent inflection too. Any idea?
Well, it's interesting that you mentioned that, because the demonstration I just told you about was something I got. It wasn't for the general public. I had a press pass, and I had reviewed their software, another software they made. But they said this is going to be the next thing. But what's interesting is shortly after that, the company and the founder who gave me the demonstration just disappeared. I mean, the company, nobody knew what happened to them. Nobody knew what happened to the founder, but the government got a hold of them, or somebody hijacked them, because once they showed this software, they and the company just disappeared. So,
Hey, Chris and Tom, I've got an idea. I have something I'd like to do. We're not going to do a show on Thursday, Thanksgiving Day. That's a week from the day. We're not going to do a show that day. We're taking the day off. So we've got 2 weeks until our next show. Chris, what do you think if I just offered that we're going to give away an Echo Dot, an Amazon Echo Dot? I'll give one away to the best idea for controlling stuff in your radio station, either the most creative or maybe most practical thing that you could do with your voice through one of these smart devices. And here's how, here's the best way to register. Go to our Facebook page. Just look for Twirt, This Week in Radio Tech, on Facebook, and like our page. Go find this episode, and in the comments, give us your idea for what's the coolest, best, or most doable thing. You know, give us some reason if you like, and we'll have 2 weeks before we have to decide who's going to win, and we'll announce the winner 2 weeks from today, and Chris and I will look through those, and we'll decide, hey, that's the best idea right there. And, you know, hey, if we tie, maybe we'll have to give away two. Chris, what do you think? Is that a workable idea?
I think it's workable. That'd be fun. Yeah, why not?
Okay.
Then we revisit them 6 months and find out how they made it.
I don't want to have to go look up our Twitter and everything else for, you know, replies and responses. So let's make it the Facebook page. I'll put this in the show notes for this show. Go to our Facebook page and comment on this episode. And you can comment either on the live episode that's on there now, or when we post it for real, when it goes onto YouTube. But post it on this, on our Facebook page for This Week in Radio Tech. Tom, I'll report the best ideas back to you, and maybe you can incorporate that in some upcoming writing that you're going to do about controlling stuff in the broadcast station. How's that sound?
Sounds like a plan. Let's do it.
All right, good. We'll make somebody happy if control of your world by your voice is what you want to do. Hey, our time is almost up, but we've got a couple of tips of the week coming up. Chris Tobin always has one, and Tom kind of said he might have a tip of the week.
I scribbled something down. I've got it now.
All right, good, yes. good. This Week in Radio Tech with Chris Tobin, Kirk Harnack, and with Tom Vernon, our guest, is brought to you in part by our friends at Lavo. Now, when you go to the Lavo website, do me a favor, show them you like us, okay? Go to lawo.com/twirt. That's T-W-I-R-T for This Week in Radio Tech. So just go to that website, lavo.com/twirt. And when you go there, when you go to /twirt there, it's going to take you automatically to the page that they have that lists their radio products. And one of those products is the new Ruby console. Now, you know, the folks at Lavo even joke about this, because it's kind of common knowledge. When you buy a Lavo console, you also hire a German guy with a laptop. Okay. That's because there's a lot of stuff you can set up a Lavo console, whether it's a huge a console that's, I mean, as big as takes up half a tractor trailer, whether it's a console like that for a live events, or the Olympics, or the America's Cup, or, you know, a console that's in use at BBC or the CBC or NPR, or whether it's a small, more diminutive console meant for radio, like the Lavo, like the Crystal Clear, like the Crystal console, any of those. Well, sometimes they joke, yeah, if you want to make it sing and dance, you need to get the German guy with a laptop to come in. Well, guess what? The Ruby console is different. You can program this Ruby console yourself. There's a lot of intuitive stuff built right into it that makes it almost ready to go out of the box. I mean, it's just almost there. But if you want to do more, you can get way under the hood and program it to do all kinds of magic. And that's the benefit of the Ruby console. You know, and the same paradigm actually carries over to users of the console. If you just need to use the console as an ordinary don't want to say run of the mill, but you know, as a board operator, as a shift disc jockey, where you know you're concerned with getting your voice on the air and your callers on the air. Hey, it's easy to operate. It works just like any other console. You know, on off buttons, fader knobs, and bam, you're good to go. But if you want to get under the hood, if you're an advanced operator and you want to create a special mix minus for that interesting remote from halfway around the world, you can do that. You can get under the hood and create some really amazing custom features. You can play with EQ, parametric EQ. There's 96 channels of DSP audio processing available in the Ruby console. There's so many features here. It's just amazing. And again, it has two personalities. That personality that's easy to set up and easy to use, and also that way under the hood personality where you can get in and customize all manner of things inside, buttons and knobs and functions and feeds, incoming, outgoing. You can really customize the thing. Whether you are an engineer or whether you are an advanced user, you'll be able to do these things. All right, check it out if you would. It is the Ruby console from Lavo. Again, that website is lavo.com/Ruby. And you also want to check out and see what they're doing about the whole idea of virtual radio. They have a product called Relay that really starts to do that. And even the Crystal Clear console takes that on the first step. lavo.com/tour. Thanks a lot, Lavo, for sponsoring This Week in Radio Tech. All righty. Chris Tobin, why don't you take the first crack at our tip of the week, if you would, please.
Well, sure, certainly. Well, here's a good one. It's real simple. It's putting numbers on wires. I mentioned this a couple episodes back, a while back. Now, everybody keeps laughing at me. They go, oh, I have to do that for. Well, how many times you work in a rack or a studio? Yes, you may be using Cat 5. I know there are people in the audience right now going, cable numbers. Well, I don't use my cables. What's that? No. Cat 5 cables. Okay, we're going to use Ethernet cables as an example. And you know, you're in a rack and in a room in a studio or a voice booth, and you're trying to work on something, and all of a sudden you have a bundle. You don't know where it goes, comes to and from. Mm-hmm. Yesterday, I was at a facility in Manhattan, and I happened to walk past a rack, and two gentlemen were replacing UPS. I said, oh, that's pretty cool. And then I happened to look inside the rack. I said, oh, is this the equipment that runs the lighting on the top of the building, the Philips lights? And they said, oh, yeah. I said, oh, very cool. And as I'm watching them replace, they needed a screwdriver. So it just so happens I had a toolkit with me, and they needed a screwdriver. I was able to help out, so I hung around. And I'm watching them try to figure out where the cables went into their switch, Ethernet switch. And they're poking and pulling. And I'm noticing, wow, you've got 24 cables. These lights are on the rooftop of a building that illuminates the skyline of New York City, and not one of them is numbered, and they have no idea where they go. And he unplugs something. He unplugs one cable, and you hear this beep, 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 beep. And I go, that's an interesting sound. The back of the rack goes, plug it back in, plug it back in. So, word to the wise, it's worth the extra time. Yes, you can laugh and you think I'm making this up. I'm not kidding. I watched these two guys. They're IT people, all right? They're not broadcasters. But the lights that they were working on literally changed the lighting on the top of a building in New York City. And I'm standing going, wow, I just helped them out with a screwdriver and telling them about cable numbers. And now when I look at the skyline at night, I can say, that's my help. But the point is, cable numbering is important. Documenting what you've done, where it goes and to and from is important. Mission critical. They pull up wired out yesterday. Apparently it was mission critical because something started beeping and one of the guys started yelling to put it back.
Oh,
who knows what it was controlling or where it went. But there are 24 Ethernet cables. There are four fiber optic GBIB connections, GBICs. So I'm guessing it was part of a large network of things, and pulling out that one cable set off an alarm somewhere.
Wow. Yeah, you know, you've said this over and over again, and here I built a radio facility 3 years ago in Greenville, Mississippi. And, just faking myself out, thinking, I don't really have to number these because it really doesn't matter which port they go into. But sometimes you do need to find the other end of it and make sure that that's the right cable. So, yeah.
And when you pull out that cable with port 2, Studio 4 went off the air. That's right. It doesn't matter.
Yeah. Tom Vernon, what is your tip of the week for our listeners?
Well, I would just want to agree with you and Chris. For me here, I have a house with a very complicated infrastructure, and the P-Touch labeler is my best friend. So just I agree completely with that. My tip is we were talking earlier about how to do radio on demand and the importance of that. And one of the coolest sites to get an understanding of that and or see a good example is at WMBR.org. That's the student station at MIT. They have block programming. They have a fascinating range of programs on, and some of them at strange hours. But again, you can just go to that site, WMBR.org, click schedule, and the way they have it laid out is just beautiful. So if you really want to explore that and how it works and see a good example, that's the place to go.
Good idea. I will, looking for schedule right now, but I'll put this, and that's WM as in Mary or N as in Nancy?
M as in Mary. Okay, B as in boy.
I got it then. Okay.
R as in radio.
Gotcha. All right. I will put that in the show notes, and we'll have a look at that smart layout. Gentlemen, thank you so much. We're going to end the show here, and I want to thank our sponsors, the Telos Alliance. Looking forward to virtual radio, and already providing some tools to do that, and more to come. Also, BSW Broadcast Supply Worldwide at bswusa.com, where it's the Movember sale, and also Lavo at lavo.com/twert. That'll let them know that you heard about it right here. And their new Ruby console. Tom Vernon, thank you so much for lending your credibility and your intelligence and your experience to our show. I hope that we'll have you back again sometime.
Well, thanks so much for having me, Kirk. This was good.
Well, thank you for taking an hour, and I will look forward to more of your articles. And hey, sometimes you get to work with the Telos Alliance, and I appreciate that as well. We know we're going to get good coverage and a well-written article when you do that. So thanks.
Okay, thank you.
And Chris Tobin, thank you for joining us as well, taking time out of your schedule. And hey, man, I hope you feel better.
Oh, you know, it's just sinuses. It's a weather change. It's fine. It's nothing. There's no infection, no nothing. It's just the usual stuff. So I'll manage through it. I'm just looking for my Lederhosen because I was talking to Bill Bennett about Lavo, and I'm saying, where did I put that stuff? I guess it was the laptop and the German guy. Bill Bennett's the rep for Lavo here in the States, for those who don't know.
Yes, so just, yes, he's been on our show before. Yeah.
We always jab back and forth. Yes.
So remember, we just during the show, I hope I have enough of the details worked out. We're going to give away one of these, She Who Shall Not Be Named. It's the, here, maybe we put it right side up. There we go. The dot. I'll give away one of these. Give us your idea in the comments section on our Facebook page, not my Facebook page, not the GFQ Facebook page, but the one for Twert This Week in Radio Tech. Comment on this show. Or when we post the published version of the show, comment there. Either one, we'll read them all. And Chris and I will decide who's got the best idea for remote controlling or controlling something at your station with that, the Amazon Echo. And then we got to figure out how to do it. Maybe that's when we'll have Alex Hartman on to figure out, okay, that's what you want to do? Well, here's how you would get that done. So we'll get that figured out. So go comment sometime in the next 2 weeks, and I'll try to remind you as well, okay? Thanks a lot for joining us. Thanks to Suncast. He is working still with a shoestring. And also thanks to Andrew Zarian for being the founder of the GFQ Network. We'll see you in 2 weeks on This Week in Regular Tech. Bye-bye.